Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea with a rollicking song. He sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number 2, 7 a.m.
Right on time.
In your face.
In your face.
No,
in your face.
In your face.
We're number one.
Clock Nazis around here.
Well, it took football season to get you guys to focus.
So. Hey, we're here. We're ready to go. Determined. Pumped up.
You want to have a deep conversation. Let's talk mid-July to mid-August. Should we be doing shows?
Should we be teachers?
We're here. We're here and we're proud to be here.
You're damn right we are.
I think our vacation schedules prove that point.
Yeah.
Well, easy. We've been here most of the year.
I'm talking about mine.
Yeah. You got the summer of swag. We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the program. We didn't even dive in to old Missouri and Murray State.
You want to talk about the racers, huh?
I'm
what about
surprised
Utah, Southern
we haven't
Utah?
Got to Utah. Cam Rising, healthy.
5 tutties in the first half. Sit them down. Welcome back,
Brett
Cam Rising.
Keithy, healthy.
Man, Utah covering that spread was the easiest thing to predict yesterday.
That was an absolute woodshed right there.
Utah beat Southern Utah by 49. Kansas only beat Lindenwood, who nobody had heard of, by 45.
Took Kansas a little bit to get going. And then when they did, they put the hammer down in the second half.
Let me ask how you guys compute this stuff in your brains when you're watching, because the NFL has this happen too. The NFL's coming back next Thursday.
Yes, it is.
A week from now, we're going to be talking about how Eagles Packers are going to be in Brazil.
Yes, and we'll be recapping the Kansas City Baltimore opening game a week from today.
All sports erections. Let me ask you how you compute week one, because all of our schools, as we assessed yesterday, they're playing garbage-ass teams.
Playing nobody.
I know, you know, Dan Lanning's is focused on Idaho, as he would be October 12th against Ohio State.
Well, we're focused on Oregon. We got to be the best Oregon
week. Right, yeah. Right. Oregon State. We just got to keep ourselves in check, and we'll be all right week to week. I get all that stuff, all that coach speak. How much leeway do you give teams in week one? Like, the big games, whoever's not more prepared, you're going to suffer an upset, and people will talk about
Clemson, Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, those sorts of games.
But like NC State, they won by 17, but that was a dogfight.
It was a little clunky.
How much leeway do you give, whether it's your team or other teams playing quote-unquote lesser opponents, how much leeway for week ones do you guys give? Like, how much do you go, dogfight? Week one, halftime, kind of close. I'm not panicking. This is week one.
I think there's certain teams that we hold to a higher standard. I would put my team into that category. Like, if you're competing for a national championship, you should not do what NC State did last night and trail in the second half at home to Western Carolina.
Okay.
That's a problem. For the rest of the top 25, like outside of those 7, 8, 9 teams, however many you want to say have a legitimate shot to maybe win a title this year, I'm willing to give leeway because of the current structure of the sport.
Like, if my Beavs are up 17-10 at halftime, am I panicking?
I don't think. What's the final score?
Right.
Do you win by 28? Do you win by 24? Do you win going away? You shut them out in the second half. Like, you have so many new players. You have a new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator.
Yep.
You're now communicating in helmets. You've never done that before. Mm. All of this new stuff is coming together. And if you're going to get off to a clunky start without the benefit of a preseason, I'm not going to throw your season out. There is an aspect of just win. Now, you don't want to eke out wins over West Carolina or Idaho State or any of these kind of Portland State for Wazoo. But there is an aspect of just win, and then let's see where you go from week one to week two. That's when you usually see the jump from teams who were good to say, all right, we can kind of clean some of this stuff up. By next week, we'll be playing much better.
Yeah,
football.
How much is it of them just not being quite precise, still learning? How much new stuff do I have? New positions, new coordinators, new schemes, new whatevers. and it just takes us a little bit to get all on the same page and find a rhythm versus, wait, there were plays out there and we didn't make the plays.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are two different things.
Rutgers against Howard, I think, is a great example of this. Like, the first half was a little sloppy.
It was like 7-7 late in the first half.
Yeah. Howard was moving the ball, picking up first downs, and Rutgers wasn't, like, blowing them out 44-7.
Yeah, final score looks a lot different. And in NC State's case, I jokingly said this earlier, but I do think there's a hint of truth to it. Now, the Dirty Poll has to support NC State because we were very high on them at the start of the year. You know who they play next week at home?
I don't.
Tennessee.
Oh, so it's an easy look.
A little bit of
spot.
You know, you're ready for this game. You're game planning, but you know where their minds are at. That's a big one for them.
Well, with college football being here and the NFL still having to wait about a week, it is you hinted at something that I wanted to talk about today that's kind of, I think, flying under the radar. So this is the first year of college football. They've got these new rules. They also have a new thing happening in college football they never had before.
Mm.
Helmet communication.
Yes, they do.
And I heard Cole Kublik talk about this with our buddy Josh Pate, and I heard Dan Lanning talk about it yesterday on Primetime about, is this something that's bigger than people are giving it? That it's one thing to have communication in your helmet till, I don't know what point they cut off.
15 seconds.
You have it
until 15 seconds on the play clock.
So it's the same in college. I don't know what that impact will be. But the minute you see Riley Leonard put his hands over his ears at Kyle Field, what's your alternate communication and how just kind of that's going to go for teams? Dan Lanning yesterday on with Isaac Atsouk was kind of talking about helmet communication and this being so new and how it's slowly going to roll itself out.
I'm really anxious to see, you know, game one and what it looks like. You know, the switch will go off at 15 seconds. So that's going to be something that's a little bit different in the game, because in practice, you kind of just have to hold yourself accountable. You don't have a switch that turns it on and off, you know, so that'll be one piece that's different. But we've practiced it all fall camp. Our coaches and players have done a really good job with it. I think it's really important as a coach that you don't give too much information and you let your players go out there and play. So that's something we're going to, you know, make sure that we monitor and self-scout ourselves after the first game. Like, how was this? How could this be better? But I think it'd be something that could be a really cool advantage and something we're going to take advantage of when we get out there.
And so he's not going to have trouble with this in week one against Idaho, nor is any of the other Northwest schools who are playing at home against some of these patsies.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's interesting going forward, like Oregon at Ohio State, or actually be Ohio State at Oregon. Oregon going to Michigan.
Yeah, late in the year.
The Big House, it's loud. Maybe Wisconsin is good with Tyler Van Dyke.
Hell, I think
this
Oregon
year.
At Oregon State, that place is going to be an absolute insanity.
100%. Yeah, it should be as loud as it's almost ever been because of the hostility they feel towards Oregon. And just kind of what this means. I can't remember if it was the final 2 minutes, but they had said last night on the Colorado broadcast that there's a point where Shador just calls the offense.
I think it was two-minute drills.
Two-minute drills.
He gives them little tips and tidbits in his helmet communication, but he's basically calling plays.
Shador is the one dictating what is actually being called, which is a hell of a responsibility for a college quarterback, but I think it shows the trust that maybe they have with him. And so what is this little thing going to be in the sport that they've never had this before? And Dan Lanning even openly talking about it, I think, is something to note of, oh, yeah, this is going to matter a lot for teams.
Which is why I think you look at some of the teams that are going on the road. You mentioned Notre Dame on the road at A&M. I would look at Penn State going on the road to West Virginia.
In Morgantown, yeah.
It's a handful of these where you're going into a tough environment. You've never used this in a real game before. It's one thing, as Lanning points out, to use in practice where you have a free-for-all how long you want to talk and how the communications flow, and you can turn up the music as loud as you want. It's different than when you're down by 7 in the third quarter and it's 3rd and 11 and you're trying to get your play in and the crowd's going crazy and he can't hear you, and now we got to switch to hand signs, and now we got to rush the plan, or we got to get a delay a game. There's just so much newness that you're going to have to figure out. I am adamantly against playing games like Oregon and Oregon State are playing this weekend. I think they're stupid. I hate when you play an opponent that you know is basically a guaranteed win. It's a glorified scrimmage. This is one of the few benefits of a game like this, is that you get an entire game to essentially have not only your home crowd behind you so you don't have to deal with the noise, but just flush out, how is this going to work in a game? Like, again, it's different in a spring game. It's different in practice. How much information are you going to give? How many times are you going to be calling a play that you run out of time? And, like, the last four words of the play don't get in because you have to cut off at 15 seconds. Like, I guarantee you it's going to happen to a lot of teams around the country this weekend. And so having a cakewalk game where you can just go, all right, let's see how this works. All right, we need to do this next week. Or, hey, when I was giving you this advice, that was too much information. Or, why didn't you tell me about this safety and where he was lined up pre-snap? I want that for next week. You can work all of these kinks out, and some teams won't have that benefit because they're playing a tougher opponent in a tough environment.
I forget who it is. I think it was what was Brady's boy's name? I'm blanking right now. One of his white wide receivers. Not Welker, not Amendola. Edelman.
Julian Edelman.
Edelman was asked on a podcast, why do NFL teams, I think it was the McCourty Bros, maybe they were doing a broadcast, and they basically, I don't understand offense. Like, why you guys need to be having all these crazy-ass long play calls to just, hey, I'm throwing a flat.
Yeah, here's a curl, yeah.
And Edelman basically said, well, it's for this reason, that reason. And he goes, well, Josh McDaniels, famously, I guess, has the shortest play calls.
Yeah.
It's like as basic as it possibly gets. I wonder in college, do you have shorter play calls so then you can add, hey, if the safety creeps up, remember the dude, you know what I mean? Like, just give them specific coverages that to watch for on defense. I think I would be bad at this. I think I would be a bad offensive coordinator with helmet communication because I would overload with information. I'd be like, and make sure you stay away from the left. Hey, that rusher's beating our left tackle to hell right now.
Right.
And make sure when you go to I'd just be telling him every possible
corner
thing.
Number seven's limping a little bit, trying to attack him. This safety's not going to be in the middle of the field. And you're like, oh, damn it, I cut off.
Don't forget your insurance blanket. The running back's right there for a little dump pass. I'd just be overloading their brain with too much. But that's part of all of this is how much information is going to be relayed versus you trust Dylan Gabriel. Or you trust whoever your quarterback is with, here's the play, you understand their coverages, we watch tape all week, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, go sling it, you're going to be just fine. It's just seeing how teams handle it when there are breakdowns in the communication. Like Notre Dame has kind of brought this up, we'll be fine if we can't get the plays in because it's too loud.
They'll probably have hand signals.
You're going to have hand signals and stuff, but just how that goes. Like a lot of games can be lost late because, like I even thought this in North Dakota State a little bit last night, when they're coming back. They're down by 11. They have that drive with, 6 minutes left, 7 minutes left, whatever it was. The clock management on that drive was horrible. Like running the ball for 3 yards, let's kill 40 seconds and then snap it again. Like, do you realize you're down 2 possessions? Now, they were lucky that Colorado put their head up their ass and threw the ball on first down and stopped the clock and ultimately gave them a chance for a Hail Mary. But this can decide the outcome of a game, man. Your communications and how quickly you can get plays in and how you're able to relay that. How many times do you have to call a timeout to avoid a delay a game penalty because there was a breakdown or you couldn't get all the information that you needed to, and now you don't have a timeout for the end of the game when you need a last-minute drive and you're trying to come back. Like these things can loom very large in football games, and seeing how teams handle it will be really interesting in week one.
Antsy in my pants. Fancy College Football Edition next on The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
We have a 4-person ticker coming up. It's going to be quite the extravaganza, a little breakfast menu for you. Do breakfast places do like 4 different servings of a meal? You know, you get a dinner and you get like a 9-course meal.
I would love a 4-course breakfast.
How would you start a 4-course
breakfast?
You would
start it with either a pastry or some fresh fruit.
Pastry, fruit.
I feel like fruit would be the right way to go because pastry would be too heavy.
Yeah, you don't want to load yourself up with bread if you got big things to follow.
Because I got eggs and probably, bacon coming.
Or
right?
You could do a little granola, yogurt, something like that. You could do that
That's
as a first course.
Very true. You could do that. I think eggs and bacon would be my second course. Nice and easy.
Okay.
Couple of strips of bacon. Maybe
all
an over easy egg.
Yep.
A little dip it. You got to dip the bacon in the egg.
Mm.
Phase three. Then you got to get a little bit thicker.
Now
right?
you're going.
Imagine.
Now you're probably moving into some sort of pancakes, French toast.
Yeah. So I was wondering if that would be the fourth one.
That'd be last because it'd be somewhat like dessert.
So maybe like a cottage cheese in between.
Okay, yeah, like something lighter a little bit.
Yeah.
Refill.
Right.
Save some energy.
Go protein.
And then you go big. Go big or go home for
like
course
this.
Number four.
Yeah.
That's a new idea. TM, trademark.
But we got 4 stops. We're going to do season record predictions and one thing to watch from 4 different people in 1 segment.
I mean, they all play bad teams, but I think there's something to watch for all of them.
Well, you could say it for not just the game, you could say it for the season.
Yeah.
We've got new quarterbacks at all these programs, all 4 of them
we do.
Are having new quarterbacks start for them. Expectations vary. New coaching. It's just interesting. So we'll start with Angie at 7:30 at Beaver Blitz. Ryan Clark of the Oregonian at 7:35-ish, call sure. it, whatever.
Yeah, ballpark.
On the Oregon Ducks. And then we'll go Chris Fetters, dogman.com. And then we'll wrap it with Jessamyn McIntyre, who does sidelines for the Cougs.
Boom goes the dynamite.
So we'll do a four-stop ticker, season record predictions, one thing to watch for all four of those teams coming up. But I am antsy in my pantsy.
Oh, what do we got?
As you can tell from the show so far, we're excited college football is back in our lives.
Yes, we are.
And I'm antsy for a kind of like a smorgasbord of things. I'm excited to see, despite the opponents, the quarterback play at all four of these places. Does Will Rogers come out, look sharp? What's the kid at Washington State?
John Mateer,
thank you. Just escape me. Gabriel and McCoy, how they look in their systems in their first games. Interesting to think about what we heard yesterday with Yogi about how Gabriel is not going to get the Bo Nix ramp up. Yeah. It is, you got 8 months. Let's get it going.
You're a hired gun for 1 year.
Right. And this is a big year for kind of everybody, right? Oregon obviously has a lot riding on this season. Gabriel does, too. He wants to improve his pro prospects. So what that's going to be. Javonte McCoy at Oregon State. Ryan Gunderson, first year, is like a solid OC play caller. He's been an OC, but calling the plays every mm-hmm. single time and what that system looks like, how it runs. And then I think I have decided, as excited as I am for Miami, Florida, and Notre Dame, Texas A&M, I think I'm most antsy my pansy for USC LSU.
Sunday night.
They're just, what are they? How people feel about both of those programs right now.
And their head coaches.
So many people down on USC. People don't know what to expect from Brian Kelly, but like the guy wins 10 games almost every year of his career. Yeah. I think I've concluded I'm most antsy for that game in particular outside of the local interest.
I think my number one game this weekend is Clemson, Georgia. I have a hard time getting past that one, of that we are dealing with two teams who were ranked near the top 10. I know Clemson preseason ranking just outside, but that's because they haven't moved Florida State out. Like that's a ballpark top 10 team. And it's the spread has gone down. People have been putting money in on Clemson to cover because Dabo's been really good in his career as like a 2-touchdown underdog. Does Georgia look like the juggernaut that will be unbeatable that some people fear maybe that they are? Does Clemson feel like maybe they got a legit chance to win the ACC again and they're back and relevant and they keep this thing tight and competitive? Remember, they opened, I want to say that was 2 years ago where they opened the season against each other. And wasn't it, there was like no offensive touchdowns? Am I remembering that correctly? Where they played and DJ, I think, threw a pick six and that was like the only touchdown of the game and Georgia won like 9-7 or something.
Yeah.
Super low scoring.
Low
scoring defensive game. It was one of the title years for Georgia. It wasn't the year they beat Oregon, obviously, in the opener. So it must have been the year before that. So this has been a tight competitive game. I'm just like, what does that gap look like? And does Georgia look like an unbeatable juggernaut? Because that will be a bit of a concern. That is the one I think I circle most nationally. On the LSU-USC front, though, remember, too, that LSU has lost tough openers back-to-back years now under Brian Kelly. Year one, they played Florida State. I want to say that game was in Atlanta. And I think they missed some kicks. They lost a tight back-and-forth game, and Mike Norvell beat them in the opener. And then last year, remember, Florida State kind of took them behind a woodshed in the first game of the season. And it was an eye-opener on both sides of like, damn, Florida State's pretty good, but also what's going on with LSU? Daniels went on to win the Heisman, but he's lost now back-to-back years, his first 2 years in LSU, a tough opening game. Three in a row would be brutal for him because it's the South, man. It's their religion, and you know there's going to be a freak out. No matter who loses that game, the fan base is doing some soul-searching of like, where are we going, and do we have the right guy?
Well, and imagine the other side of that. If USC's defense is still getting shredded
still
and looks
sucks.
Awful, and Miller Moss is obviously not Caleb Williams,
right.
And here we go. LSU wins.
Right.
You've lost in Vegas. Kelly Ford is a follow on Twitter at KFordRatings. This individual does college football power ratings and resume rankings. They have 19,000 followers, so I'm just going to cite this. Send out a graphic for week one watchability.
Mm.
So this is a weighted score of the projected quality according to power ratings and competitiveness and most deserving rankings. So it's kind of a combination of things. And,
okay.
And then it's a ranking of like, what games are most interesting for TV?
The most exciting games of the weekend.
Now, I'm not seeing a number one here, so I guess I'd have to go back into the account, but I got the graphic up, and it's LSU-USC is the one on this graphic.
Yeah.
Number two is Penn State at West Virginia, which you can catch on 910.
Yes,
that's the big nooner in Morgantown. That's number two. Miami at Florida is number three. Notre Dame. Oh, Notre Dame at A&M is number one. So there you go. The graphic for some reason. Oh, it's a prime time. All right. And then it's UNC Minnesota yesterday. Clemson and Georgia is number five. So that's pretty average. You know, I'd probably slot it somewhere in that ballpark. Definitely top five worthy. And then it's just a bunch. But it's just interesting when you go through, because college football never gives us a ton of great games in week one.
No.
But when you give me like four or five, I'm ecstatic because that's all I really need. And then I can just check in on all the other programs handling business or on upset alert.
I mean, it's really the only downside of early college football. And it's something that I would love to see fixed long term. The NFL has this argument where immediately out of the gate, the first two nights of the season, what do you get next Thursday, Friday? I get a rematch of the AFC title game. I get the Packers, who are a dark horse to make the Super Bowl this year, against the Eagles, who are always one of the most watched and interesting teams in the NFL. That's just your first two nights. You get Niners and Jets. You get compelling, interesting matchups right out of the gate, basically every single week in the NFL. To my knowledge, I believe there are only two ranked matchups in the opening weekend of the season. Or no, three, excuse me, because you have USC, LSU, they're both technically ranked. Notre Dame, A&M are both ranked. And Clemson and Georgia are both ranked. I think those are the only three games that we have that include both teams being ranked
but
this year.
Yeah, but the thing about that, so we're using...
some of it's misleading because it's...
We're
Georgia
using
Tech,
rankings that don't matter.
Right.
West Virginia might be top 25. Like, that's how I'm putting it in my head.
No doubt about it, but I just, from an interesting standpoint going in... I want more of these games in week one, because these are the games that we love about the sport when you get these compelling matchups. Like, you can make an argument for USC LSU Sunday night. I can make the argument for Georgia Clemson. Those are the games that are atop these lists, are the games that we most want to watch. Are there going to be other upsets? Like, could South Dakota State beat Oklahoma State? Sure, that'd be fun if we get to see it. But top 25 matchups, we need more of them early on in the college football season.
It's my only gripe and how I differentiate, because we love college football here, obviously, but it's why I always edge the NFL a little bit.
Yeah.
Is they only have 32 teams, and every single week, there are certainly duds on the schedule, but then you get the Cardinals beating Cowboys and my survivor pool is dead.
And for the most part, the primetime standalone games, they do a good job of putting some of the Thursday games in the middle of the season.
Sure.
But they understand the TV product a little bit more than college football.
I just think, one, the teams don't get penalized for easy schedules. And two, it's tough to get these teams to agree. They want neutral sites. They don't want to go home and homes anymore. And so that part sucks. So there are elements of the scheduling that do blow. But I got LSU USC Sunday, Penn State West Virginia 9 a.m., Miami Florida at 12:30, Notre Dame Texas A&M on ABC at 4:30, Georgia Clemson at 9 a.m. Like, I've got a good enough slate for me. Plus, I get to watch all four of our local schools and see how they do against the patsy opponents they have. And speaking of those patsy opponents, let's do a four-stop ticker. Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, Ryan Clark, O-Live, Chris Fetters, Dogman.com, and Jessamyn McIntyre coming up, sideline reporter and works at 93.3 KJR. They join us next for the Daily Ticker on the Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit with the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is poured by Pelican Brewing. Be ready for your next afternoon vacation with Beak Breaker Tropical. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
All right, Daily Ticker time on a football Friday, brought to you by Pelican Brewing. Visit pelicanbrewing.com for more details on locations, events, award-winning beers, independently brewed since 1996, Pelican Brewing, born at the beach. We're going to do a little quick look at all four Northwest schools, a prediction, a feeling, something to look for as all of them kick off their seasons tomorrow. And we start in Corvallis with our good friend, Angie Machado, covering Beavers, the Oregon State Beavers for a long time, owner of BeaverBlitz.com, at AngieMachado1 on Twitter. Angie, good morning to you. What's the thing you're most excited to see as Oregon State kicks off their season tomorrow at home against Idaho State?
Just new coaching staff. It's going to be fun to see kind of what Trent Bray and his staff of several former Beavers bring to the table. And as far as, you know, the team quarterback, I mean, all eyes are going to be on that quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't feel that anybody won that position outright. They're going with Jabani McCoy, but I do think we see, you know, Jabari Johnson and some Ben Golbranson potentially. And it's going to be really intriguing to see how that works. I have no fear with the defense. I think the defense is going to be solid, but that – quarterback position is just so crucial on making that offense work.
Well, kind of a two-parter for you, because McCoy surprised some people. We thought it might be Johnson, maybe it was Gulbranson. They named McCoy. How concrete do you think that is? Obviously, that's going to be dictated by his play, but how concrete with McCoy do you think they are, and how do you just feel about their win-loss chances? You went through on the website, the FPI that ESPN put out, 9-3. Where are you at on this crop of Beavers?
Yeah. So I think they're going to get some looks, you know, the other quarterbacks. I don't think it was a full on outright win. Hmm. Of course, you can't necessarily just say, you know, you can't put doubt in Giovanni McCoy's head, though, that he's going to be looking over his shoulder. So, you know, I thought that was I thought it was super close. You couldn't really make a determination the 3 weeks of camp that I saw. So, you know, he brings some things where he can do things with his legs. He can make the throws that Gundy wants. So I'm excited to see what he does. As far as season, yes, FPI from ESPN had 9-3. I think my staff pick was 8-4. But honestly, I mean, this team has a ceiling that, you know, I think the Oregon game is the one game that you pretty much chalk up as a loss. But other than that, I see three pivotal games with Cal, Washington State, and Boise State. And I think those three games right there could go either way. They're pretty much coin flips when you're looking at them. So, you know, this team, I mean, 11-1, I think Beaver fans would be crazy excited.
Yes.
But you know, like I said, a 9-3, 8-4, I think that is really in the realm of possibility here.
Yeah, could get a good bowl invite as well. Last one for you, Angie. We love learning about new players in week 1. That's the benefit of playing a bad team. They're a 4-touchdown favorite. Give me a name that maybe you think after watching fall camp that we're going to learn about tomorrow and be like, oh, this guy's pretty good.
Well, there's tons of them, right? Because there's so many transfer portal and guys missing. But I think Isaiah Chisholm, middle linebacker, is going to be a guy, young guy, has been with the team, not a transfer portal guy, but he is one that really has kind of popped. And Anthony Hankerson offensively is a guy that transferred in from Colorado. But just watching him, his body type, I think Beaver fans are going to look at him and kind of be reminded of a former Rodgers brother, just in his really low center of gravity, thick legs, and can just move the football.
Check out all our great work, beaverblitz.com. Angie Machado, one on Twitter. Go give her a follow. Have fun covering the season. Thanks as always, and enjoy the kickoff of college football season.
Hey, thanks. You guys, too.
There you go. Angie Machado. Good stuff from her. Let's go from Corvallis to Eugene and get the thoughts on the Ducks as they open their season tomorrow right here on The Fan, the home of the Oregon Ducks, as they take on Idaho. Ryan Clark, our good friend from the Oregonian, covering the Ducks, at Ryan T. Clark on Twitter. Ryan, what is the thing that you're most interested to see in the opener tomorrow against Idaho?
For me, it's, you know, what's that number on the scoreboard next to Oregon, right? And, you know, that Idaho team, you know, they're going to come in and try to put together some nice things to build on for the rest of the regular season. But for these Oregon Ducks, it's about working out the kinks from fall camp and seeing just how high they can run it up, because they're deep, they're talented, and they've got a lot of expectations.
Well, Ryan, we went through it yesterday. I got 10-2. Dirt has 11-1, and Swag has 13-0. Woo! Swag loves him some duckies this year. Where are you ultimately? Because the new conference thing, yeah, some people put the travel. I don't think the travel's that big of a deal when you get to fly the way Oregon gets to fly. Where are you at? You're one Big Ten. Oregon with expectation. What are they this year to you?
Yeah, I mean, this program you could argue has never had higher expectations than it has going into this first season in the Big Ten. Everything Dan Lanning has talked about, all the players that they've brought in on both sides of the ball, the level of talent, the level of experience. Last year's Oregon team was very good, led by Bo Nix and Bucky Irving. That offense was dynamic, and the defense proved to be one of the better units in the country. I think this season they have an undefeated regular season, and I think that there will be highly competitive games against Ohio State. Obviously, that's a game that people in Eugene, people in Columbus, and everywhere in the country have circled a million times over on their calendar on October 12th, and that game on the road at Michigan. Both of those project for me to be highly competitive, especially, you know, with how hard it'll be to play at the Big House, regardless of everything going on with the Michigan program and the step that they've sort of taken back this year from that national title team. I think there will be a couple of potentially sweaty games for Oregon on that schedule. You look at that Purdue game on short rest after the emotional high of Ohio State. That's got trap game written all over it in bold all caps. And on the road at Wisconsin, Madison's a really tough place to play. They like to jump around over there, and that's going to be a sleeper team, I think, this year in the Big Ten. So Undefeated regular season is my prediction, but by no means is it going to be a cakewalk.
All right, last one for you, Ryan. I know Dan Lanning does not like to answer this question, so I'm going to ask it of you. A lot of young guys who are going to get a chance to play this weekend. Who's a player that you think maybe will be a topic of conversation on Monday that we haven't talked much about that's going to pop this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the run game, obviously, there's a lot of talent in that backfield. A guy that showed out in the spring game who I think has an opportunity to have a big one on Saturday against Idaho is Jaden Lamar. Mm. Obviously, you know, Jordan James and Noah Whittington are leading the way in that backfield, but Lamar has a chance to break off a few big ones against Idaho. Obviously, you know, the conversation and the interest will be around what happens with Dylan Gabriel and all those weapons he's got at wide receiver. Another young guy out of that receiver group, which has a lot of talent that I think could have a big game, is Kyler Casper. They've been excited about him in camp. So, you know, a lot of depth, a lot of talent on this Oregon team, and whatever unit is in first, second, or third string, there's going to be a lot of exciting stuff to watch in that Idaho game. For
yeah,
sure.
A lot of bodies going to play in that opener. It's the beauty of opening against Idaho. Ryan Clark covering the Ducks for the Oregonian, at Ryan T. Clark on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Enjoy the college football season, man. Enjoy the first game, and we'll catch up again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
There you go. From the state of Oregon, let's go up to the state of Washington, where the Huskies talk about newness, a lot of newness, a lot of new faces in the locker room, and the coaching staff. Chris Fetters, our good friend, Dogman247, at Chris_Fetters on Twitter. Chris, I'll start where I started with the other guests. What's the one thing you're most interested to see tomorrow as Washington kicks out their season Saturday night?
Yeah, you mentioned the newness. It's exactly that. How do they assimilate all the newness that has taken place in the 8 months since they played in the national championship game against Michigan? I mean, you look at that offense and defense, the 22 starters that played against the Wolverines, Washington returns two players from that game.
Wow.
In total. The entire offense gone, either to graduation, to the NFL, or to the transfer portal. Only two starters on defense, Alfonso Tupatala, Elijah Jackson, and Elijah Jackson may not even start tomorrow night. So that will tell you the level of transition that Washington's gone through, because it's not just the players. Washington lost their entire offense. They lost their entire coaching staff as well, less than 4 days after that game against the Wolverines. So I'm very curious to see how Jed Fish is able to assimilate all that newness, all the different portal names, all the different true freshmen that have come in, all the true freshmen that he was able to keep, and all the even the portal players that he was able to keep. The starting quarterback, Will Rogers, actually was at the national championship game.
That's
and
right.
The Sugar Bowl for Washington. He was wearing a Washington jersey, and yet had thought, okay, as soon as Kalen DeBoer left to go to Alabama, what am I going to do? Well, Jed Fish was able to keep him at Washington, was able to bring in Damond Williams, who had signed with Arizona. That's your 1-2 quarterback right now. And again, you know, it's not just the newness in terms of the players. It's the newness with the schemes. It's the newness with how they're going to try to slice bread on offense and defense. You've got an offense that's really kind of rooted in the pro schemes of like a Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay,
mm-hmm.
You know, those types of things. You're going to see things at the line of scrimmage that are going to happen that are so different than how Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb did it a year ago. So I'm very curious to see how Washington fans respond to that. Also very, very curious to see how Washington fans respond to the defense of Steve Belichick. You know, Bill Belichick's son, who is now Washington's defensive coordinator, came from New England, was the play caller there on defense, is now the play caller at Washington on defense. Brand new coaching staff, all new faces. I'm just very curious to see how Fish and his staff bring that all together, as they've tried to do all spring and fall, to see how that thing works.
It's kind of an all-encompassing thing for you. We did predictions. I had 6-6. Dirt had 7-5. Our producer, Swag, had 8-4. I don't know what a good year one is in Husky fan definition, given everything you just laid out with the restart, but how committed do you think they are to Will Rogers versus if this doesn't maybe get off to the greatest of starts after week one, they go to the young guy and try to build it the way he did last year with Noah Fifita? And what qualifies, do you think, in Husky fans' minds as good year one for Jed Fish, again, given the circumstance?
Well, I think given the circumstance, getting to a bowl game for starters should be a given. And I think you're right. I think when I saw Vegas, I think the over-under is 6.5 wins. I have 7-5. but I could very easily have 6-6 as well. I think the first four games, including that Washington State game at Lumen Field on the 14th of September, which is just weird anyways. I remember for decades watching that that Colorado-Colorado State game at Mile High, like game one, thinking, why in the hell is there an in-state rivalry game week one? And now it's going to be week three for Washington State. You know, and then obviously the Oregon game being taking the place of that Washington State game at the very, very end of the schedule is just as wild, too. So with all those changes and everything else, you know, I really looked at those first four games as thinking, okay, these are four games that are very, very winnable. And Fish has shown that he can build a program. You know, he took over a program that gave up 70 in their in-state rivalry, you know, when they were down at Arizona. It turned that into a 10-3 team that beat Oklahoma in their bowl game last year. So, you know, they've got an opportunity to do some stuff early. They've got games that they're easily winnable. But then starting with that Friday night Rutgers game at Rutgers in week five, that's going to be the telltale one, I really think. And then after that, you've got they host Michigan in Seattle, guys. It's going to be completely unrecognizable. That should be a top five game in the country all year long. A rematch of the national championship game, people should be salivating. It's going to be completely unrecognizable.
Yeah.
I mean, for both teams. So just the idea that they, you know, if they can get into that meat of the schedule and figure out a way to piece together a win or two, you know, there's, you know, again, they've got to go to a whiteout game at Penn State. They've got the Oregon game in Eugene at the end of the year. They've got SC. They got to go to Iowa, which should be a really unique game too. That I know Washington fans, old timer Washington fans that I've talked to, are really excited to go see because of the Hayden Fry thing back in the day with Don James, the Rose Bowls, and all that. So that should be a lot of fun. But yeah, I really think that 6-6, 7-5, I think should be. It should be probably the baseline expectation, but really after that, they're going to have to pull out some pretty interesting wins to push past that.
It's going to be fun. It all kicks off tomorrow night. Chris Fetters, our good friend, Dogman247 at Chris_Fetters on Twitter. Thanks for the time, man. Enjoy the season kicking off. I know we'll catch up again soon. We always appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Chris Fetters. Let's go from Seattle to Pullman as the Cougars open their season tomorrow.
You mentioned their early season game.
We did. They get the Huskies in a couple of weeks, 12 o'clock on the CW against Portland State. Joining us now, Jessamyn McIntyre, KJR, up in Seattle at Jessamyn McIntyre on Twitter, and also the sideline reporter for Washington State football. Jessamyn, good morning to you. What are you most interested to see tomorrow as the Cougs kick off their season?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. To be honest, I'm interested in seeing John Mateer take over the reins. And I know that there was a quarterback competition between him and Zevi Eckhouse early on, but it became very clear that he set himself apart and he was waiting patiently behind Cam Ward. He was great, great. And everybody will say this about a quarterback room, but I could see it on the sidelines. Just a great teammate and biding his time and waiting and going through the competitive process. There was no heir apparent in him when it came to his attitude. And I'm excited to see him thrive. And I think he's got the chops to do it.
Jess, I'm struggling because Washington State didn't lose as much talent as Oregon State, but we're Pack two, where it's just us. It's Oregon State, Washington State now, and we can feel how we feel about Oregon State. I'm having a hard time reading what is Washington State this year, given how it started last year and how it kind of ended. We're not the same things here. What is the expectation, or what do you think Washington State is from a win-loss perspective this season?
I think they have a lot of opportunity, specifically to set the tone this weekend. I think they could be a 10-2 team, to be honest. And that's not looking down my nose at a Mountain West schedule in any way, shape, or form. This is a competitive schedule that they have. You know, you want to say FCS and, you know, whatever you want about this, you know, the schedule that we're looking at. But that setting the tone early against Portland State. Portland State has been a thorn in Washington State's side for a very long time. So week one and week two, I think, will set the landscape for this season. Texas Tech is going to be absolutely huge. I mean, it's completely sold out. And obviously, the late, great Mike Leach is being inducted into the Washington State Hall of Fame that weekend. So we have two, I think, Portland State is, you know, the biggest thing. You want to say week one is the tone setter. Sure, that's just your basic thing to say. But Portland State, you get that monkey off your back, and I think that they can hit the road running. Texas Tech, like we saw Washington State do against Wisconsin in the past, that really set the tone for success, you know, until you know, the bye week, and then every time the wheels came off last year. But I think that they could be a serious, serious problem for a lot of teams. Obviously, the Apple Cup, the first quarter of this season is really going to tell us a lot about their potential. And, you know, momentum is a real thing in this game, in this sport. And so, like I said, I think they have all the potential in the world to be a serious bowl team, not just some random bowl team. And considering the way that things have shuffled, as you know, as Oregon State has known as well, the bowl season could have serious implications because of the Pac-2 and where that stands. These two could actually be in a premium bowl. So I really honestly see them as a 9 or 10 win team this year.
That'd be a great season in Pullman. Jessamyn McIntyre, KJR, sideline reporter for the Cougs. They start their season tomorrow at 12 against Portland State. At Jessamyn McIntyre on Twitter. Thanks so much for the time previewing the Cougs, and enjoy the season kicking off. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
All right. Thank you, my Beaver brethren.
There you go.
Have a good one.
Jessamyn McIntyre. There you go. We went to all four Northwest schools. Went a little long. We figured we would, but Look at that. You hit them all.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom.
Everybody's going to be great.
Boom, boom. Everybody's great. Everybody's feeling great. We're all feeling great. Undefeated seasons for everybody.
Hell
ready,
yeah.
Break. I want to continue this conversation on the other side. What do we want to see from our schools as they kick off their years? I'm a Husky fan, Cougar fan, Duck fan, Beaver fan, Fireway, Vancouver Ford, text line 503-864-6326. What do we want to see tomorrow? Next on The Fam.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. Coming up next.
Well, see you later.
Don't forget to get your Spraying the Line sponsors in.
I blame Baltic von Schlafly.
I do too, dude. The Polish Hammer just threw us off in that segment, man.
Those names, you can just say them very quickly, and You sound like you said it correctly.
I don't even know what the guy's name is. I think you're 100% spot on with the pronunciation there.
Baltic. His name is Baltic.
Baltic von Schlafly.
Yeah, I think he got it. I think he hit it right there.
I think that one had me stumped.
Not even Swag could do that one.
No, I was trying to listen to Patrick. I'm like,
there's an SCH.
That's one I need a pronunciation of, and I need to practice.
Yes, give me the phonetic hooked on phonics spelling of it over and over and over again, and we'll
sound it out real slow. Then slowly starts speeding up.
Yeah, then, yeah, then
a minus 1,000 favorite losing to him.
That's... He was minus 20,000.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, are you sure? Because I saw plus 2,800 on the money line.
Alcaraz entered match minus 20,000 favorite at ESPN Bet.
What?
Wow.
Is that like one of the biggest upsets in the history of sports? Like,
it's massive.
That big of a deal?
It's massive.
Wow.
This would be like... I'm trying to think of a good way.
We're in Buster Douglas territory.
The Boston Celtics losing to the Atlanta Hawks in round one.
That level of upset.
Yeah.
Like, what just happened?
How is that possible?
27 unforced errors.
Wow.
Get your fake sponsors in 503-864-6326. We will do some gambling at the bottom of the hour. We will start the final hour. Look, we went a little long there. You got four guests in one segment. It's going to happen from time to time.
I was nervous about one going a little long.
One of them, say no more.
We appreciate our guests.
All the time that they give us. It's great. And they're all West Coast people, and getting West Coast people to wake up for a 7:30 hit is nearly impossible.
Yep.
So shout out to all of them. We have good texts coming in, and I want to read through some of these on the other side. And I want to ask you guys, I mean, you guys are Beavs, I'm a Duck, we got Huskies and Cougs chiming in. Like, look, all of our teams are going to win this weekend. For the love of God, all the teams win this weekend. But I do think there are things in week one that you can watch. What are the most interesting tidbits about your team, whether it be quarterback play, coach play? As Chris Fetter said for Washington, maybe it's literally everything that's interesting to you because it's all brand new. Like, we're getting the Cougs saying they're going 10-2, 11-1. Angie's saying they could go, Beavs could go 11-1.
She, to her credit, said 8-4.
She said 8-4, but they could swing games, could go either way. Like, what are we most excited for? We'll get back on track. I'm going to start the final hour there. We will spring the line coming up at 8:30. We'll give you some final weekend previews, maybe dive back into a little bit of the Colorado-North Dakota State game that we talked about earlier that happened last night. It is a loaded final hour. It is a football Friday. We start. What do you want to see from your school this weekend? Let us know. 503-864-6326. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.